Hello and welcome back to Tom Hanks Defense Force. In our second episode of 2020, we're going to be discussing the entire past decade.
Ooh.
Jack, what was your favourite thing in the 2010s?
Arsenal winning the FA Cup 3 times.
Nice. And we have a special guest today on our show as exactly. Well. Yeah, so welcome back, Kathleen.
Belle, hello.
How are you, Kat?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
How was your New Year's, actually? I've asked Jack, but not you.
Yeah, good. I was with Jack. So.
Hey!
Perfect. Just cries silently. good stuff.
The best person to spend New Year with.
Yeah. Aww. Yeah, so how's your 2020 going so far, Kat?
Yeah, good so far. Mostly spent it either working or seeing family, so quite a good balance.
Nice, yeah. I mean, has it all been managed and balanced well?
Yeah, yeah. Glad to have a day-to-day just chill.
Yeah,
and that's then everyone you show needs up. Them.
And ruin everything.
And we've got to take the Christmas decorations down until September, so.
the sweaters come out in August, don't they? Just to start things off.
Yeah.
Nice. Just to, yeah, exactly. Start the hype early.
Yeah.
All right. So as we were saying, welcome back to Tom Hanks Defense Force, and welcome to our review of the decade. This is going to be a very interesting episode where we'll be going back over the past 10 years, talking about the films that defined the decade, our favorite films, why they meant so much to us, and if you haven't seen them, why you should watch them too. So without further ado, welcome back to Tom Hanks Defense Force. And now, for our feature presentation, Tom Hanks Defense Force, with your hosts, Alex Halpern and Jack Fryer, a podcast for people who love film, television, and Tom Hanks. Hello and welcome back for the third time to Tom Hanks Defense Force. Was it the third time I said that?
Probably, yeah.
We'll go with that. Welcome back to Tom Hanks Defense Force for our review of the past 10 years of the decade episode.
Yeah.
As I mentioned before the intro, we're going to be discussing our favourite films, the films that we thought defined the past decades, why they meant so much to us, why they're particularly important cultural moments, both from an entertainment audience perspective, from a studio perspective, and just why they matter so much. So without further ado, let's crack on with it.
Yep, it's a decade. We started off a decade by tossing a coin to James Cameron. And now we ended up tossing a coin to Marvel and The Witcher, of course.
And your Witcher, yeah, the friend of humanity. you guys you're still going through it, aren't you?
3 episodes in.
Yep. So nice. Still no spoilers for further on The Witcher.
Absolutely not. Actually, that's a really good point. Just to warn the listeners in advance, there may be a few spoilers at most dropped here or there, but we'll generally try to keep it spoiler-free. Because there are plenty of films I'm sure people will want to watch if they haven't seen them already. Hopefully we'll inspire you to watch a few more. But yeah, we'll try to keep them spoiler free. Mm-hmm. But thanks very much for understanding that there are certain things that do slip out for the sake of the conversation. So Jack, should we? Would you guys just want to go through like the last decade and discuss our favourite films year by year? I think that might be a good starting point.
Yeah, so favourite films year by year, obviously we've had a big year. Every year was a big year for film, obviously in its own little unique way. But 2010, that was a big year. Obviously, 2010 was a weird year for film because obviously it started off with at the trail end of like James Cameron's Avatar hype still going way on into 2010 and to the point where it nearly won at the Oscars, but Hurt Locker beat it.
And everybody questioned whether this new 3D reimagining was going to define the decade. Whether it was the next big thing again, or whether it was just a gimmick, how many more studios would jump on this technology. It was really, a very exciting time to start the decade technology-wise, but that clearly had a very different end in sight.
I love how we've gone from like 3D being the big thing, to now it's IMAX is like the big next big thing in cinema.
Yeah, exactly. Or whether there
4D.
Were...
4D.
Yeah, exactly. And then the complete change of the traditional model,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
With the sort of the streaming boom, which is well underway,
yeah.
Only going to increase this year. So we'll discuss in more detail yep. in our 20s episode. But for you two, what were the films that defined 2010?
Iron Man 2010, obviously Iron Man 2 as well, was not the best film by that other year by a long stretch, but it did sow the seeds for Marvel Cinematic Universe, which led on to Endgame, which we had last year, and the Marvel juggernaut will keep on rolling until it runs out of steam. But obviously, but my favourite film, 2010, I thought it was Inception, but when I was looking through what came out, I thought, ah, this film was better. I'm going for Toy Story 3. The second...
Nice.
The first of two Tom Hanks films that are in this list. But Toy Story 3, I thought... Obviously, now we've got four now, so I look back on it slightly differently, as you do, obviously, when you know it's a sequel. But... It's just, for me, it was just a perfect trilogy, you know. It's, obviously, my least favourite trilogy is 2, which a lot of people consider to be shocking, but,
That is shocking.
Yeah. But basically, though, it's been a big year for Toy Story, obviously, last year was, but I think it was just a perfect ending. It was just such an emotionally powerful journey that united adults and children. Obviously, the children loved it because of the high-stakes thrills for them, adults, for nostalgia. It really was a film for everyone.
It was a full package of
emotions,
of numerous emotions and you know, elements for different age groups, which worked very well. Kat?
Well, defining wise, I felt Alice in Wonderland was quite a big step visually. Just the level of the worlds that they were building completely CGI, rather than relying mostly on a physical set, because quite often they were just standing on a green box, which I always think is sad for the sake of the actors. But I remember, for me, it stood out so much going into the cinema and just having these like 3D mushrooms all around you. And so it was sort of following on the hype of Avatar, but taking it a different direction sort of with 3D, which, as you say, did define the start of the decade.
Yeah, and that's a really, really good point. And just because, yeah, it's creating a very different world, but very much keeps that excitement for... You know, this, you know, like, got the decades of new imagination of, and, you know, what opportunities are we going to have to create these very interesting, exotic worlds.
And culturally, also, I find that that film still sticks. I mean, anyone who's ever been to a Comic-Con, MCM, Alcon, anything like that, every time you'll find a Mad Hatter. Like,
yeah.
That version of the Mad Hatter.
Johnny Depp's Mad Hatter.
You can find them anywhere. I don't think I've ever been to any sort of nerd or geek event that doesn't have someone with the mismatch hair.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, combining Tim Burton with this technological revolution was, you know, always going to be a great idea. I mean, he's sort of been pioneering in these sectors for a while, but like you were saying, putting his mark on the cultural stamp was, yeah, incredible. I'd say, I mean... There are a number of more sort of intensive dramas that I think really kicked off a decade for me. Inception, like you were saying, Jack, was definitely one of the most sort of like pivotal moments. But also things like David Fincher's drama, The Social Network.
That was a very close on the list as well, because I do love that film. It's one of the decade-defining films, I feel.
I mean, particularly with what's happening now,
yeah.
With us, you know, looking forward to the new decade where... You know, with the question of, are big tech companies going to be policed more? You know, a film about the great potential that social media has with, you know, sort of furthering democracies, with, you know,
expanding... Cambridge Analytica.
Maintaining relationships. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, sort of ending the decade with this question of how our data is being used, you know, how much choice we have into putting our information online. But that's, you know, which sort of became one of the biggest conversations of the decade.
You know who does tell you how you use their data correctly? Gareth Southgate.
Yes. boy, was he right.
But yeah, basically though, this is a big decade because this is the first decade where we truly saw film to be used as a marketing tool through social media. Because we started off at the end of the previous decade, the noughties, but the tens is when you really got to see social media really... take off in terms of like advertising and how powerful a tool it had became.
Yeah, and changing the nature of how films are, how trailers are made. So for example, the way that Facebook is designed, so that you're constantly scrolling, that therefore studios have to advertise a trailer that starts with this punchy image. Otherwise, if you're not satisfied you know, 20 seconds in, if that, then you can just keep on scrolling.
That's why when you see on, like, YouTube and Facebook, that's why on Facebook and YouTube you see trailers, where you see, like, a really quick 5-second trailer than the actual trailer.
Yeah.
Because apparently, for the first few seconds are so pivotal to have looking at the trailer, you do think, like, whoa, what just happened here? And you have to see the whole trailer, so...
Yeah, exactly.
I think that'd personally be a bit annoying, but there we go. Sure,
but also a Ryzen teaser trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a teaser trailer announcement. So we've seen an announcement to tease the teaser of a trailer, which will be teasing another trailer. So, yeah.
This is what the 27 story. Yeah. Like. There's like 20 teasers before we see the
trailer.
Actual,
will knock on your
the
door.
The main trailer.
A man will knock on your door and show you the trailer on a laptop and explode.
I also have to give a huge shout out to Darren Aronofsky's psychological thriller Black Swan.
Yes, I've
performance
seen that
wise. I mean, he's known as this visually challenging director, but Natalie Portman's performance.
Yeah, Mila Kunis was one, I forget.
Yeah, absolutely. Vincent Cassell.
Oh, yeah.
Winona
Ryder as well. You know,
yeah.
Pre Stranger Things, Winona Ryder.
Yeah.
Which is weird to say, like, pre Stranger Things, Winona Ryder, because she's obviously was an established actress way before that. But yeah.
But just, yeah. Really difficult to watch at times.
It was.
But that just worked really well to heighten the drama. 2011. What big moments do we
2011, have for me, my film of 2011, so we did have a lot of really good films come out that year. We had a very underrated film, Hannah, obviously by Joe Wright, with a Chemical Brothers soundtrack. We had Shame. Michael Fassbender film.
Yeah, Steve McQueen. Right.
Sir Steve McQueen now, he got the knighthood.
Oh, really?
Yeah, him and Sam Mendes got knighthoods.
Oh, wow.
And their addresses leaked as well, so.
Here we go.
Obviously, the
fan
film,
mail has
come. Shame was obviously, that was actually a quite important film in 2011 when it came out, because it was one of the first films that they decided not to contest for the NC-17 rating.
Oh,
sure. It was not, a lot of films, like, Saw and Hostel went down, but if I find it was Shame, they were like, keep it, Badge of Honour, so.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because Harvey Weinstein produced it, and you know, him to come out and not challenge it, I thought was weird, considering it was the, but it was all about the money. But yeah, that disgusting man. But yeah, but my film of 2011 was, I thought it was going to be The Artist or David Fincher's Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, which was the first film I saw in the cinema by myself.
Okay, yeah.
But what it was, we did have some good films as well. We had Bridesmaids as well.
Yeah, I was going to say that was probably one of my top ones, because I still watch that now and it's fantastic. Like, it's so, just brilliantly executed.
My film 2011 is the Ryan Gosling film Drive.
Okay, interesting.
Which has spawned hundreds of people buying that damn jacket and thinking they're Ryan Gosling, but they're not.
Everyone just staring silently into and trying to be these silent
when Steve
heroes.
From Chelmsford thinks he's now Ryan Gosling, but no. He just bought the jacket on eBay, mate. Quite.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of drag racing around car parks thinking they're running from mobsters.
No, I just thought that was just such a really great, powerful film, which has had so much mystery and intrigue to it, and I thought it was just stunning. Well, I watched it with my dad and he loved it as well, which was, I didn't expect that, but it happened. And it's also got the most gorgeous elevator scenes of all time.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
That's disgusting.
But yeah.
And yeah, it's got Albert Brooks as a villain, you know, Marvin from Nemo's dad, you know, the guy's, Simpsons.
He's all grown up.
He was the voice of loads of Simpsons characters as well, we've never been in a Simpsons movie.
Yeah, he's a well-established comedian.
But to see him do a sinister gangster role, you know, and Bryan Cranston as well, as he was taking off, was in it. Christina Hendricks, Oscar Isaac.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Drive for me.
Definitely. Cat?
Sucker Punch.
Sucker Punch.
Really?
Nice.
Yeah.
The Sucker Punch.
Yeah.
The Zack Snyder Sucker Punch.
I loved it. It was just, it was so different from anything I'd seen at that age.
That's things we do have to bear in mind. We were very different people when we watched these films.
Yeah,
like just you know, in terms of our emotional intelligence, like the way we watch films, we were very different people.
No, because I remember like when in the beginning of the decade we would go out and like watch. We would go out and watch like we saw Predators together, The Expendables, and now when we watch together, obviously we still watch like our like trashy horrors and stuff. Like Rats. We're still to watch. No, we don't watch Rats. It was Slugs we watched, wasn't it? Yeah.
But at the start of the decade, it was an event when we saw these films.
Yeah.
You know, we'd all go out to the cinema with
together,
a massive group of
like
us.
20
it was
people.
Such a, that was the height of our social.
And obviously, Cineworld back in the day, there was no allocated seats. So literally, you could just sit where you want.
So we'd go with like 20 of us.
And we'd like take over the back of a cinema.
Yeah.
And you'd have some like people like passing a big bottle of Coke we've smuggled in between each other. Yeah. everyone having a little
we
sip.
We definitely annoyed so many people.
Yeah.
But
when we all
used
to dress up as well, and we saw cowboys, Asian True Grit, we all dressed up as cowboys, which was us just wearing a leather jacket and a cowboy hat and nothing else.
Oh, the cheek.
But yeah.
I would say, yeah, Bridesmaids definitely, I'd say the top of 2011 for me, but also, well, yeah, was the artist 20?
Yeah.
I mean, but all because I'd actually forget about that, to be honest. And that was a brilliant piece of, a brilliant gamble. Did it win the Palme d'Or?
I think it won best. I think it won best picture.
And it won the Palme d'Or at Cannes as well, I think. Brilliant exercise in experimenting with how we tell stories. Great exposure for the team behind it, the French production company and the French stars. A great sort of little shake up for our expectations of what cinema is supposed to be, particularly because, like we were just saying, we're coming into the decade with massive expectations for technology, and to throw a silent film into it with this massive throwback to the 1920s,
With two
brilliant
majority unknown leads as well. Now they're stars, but he had a good supporting cast. John Goodman, James Cromwell, off the top of my head, John Goodman was great in it.
Mm. 2012.
What are we thinking? The thing is, looking at the list of 2012 films, obviously it's a bit difficult because some films came out in 2012 in America, but we didn't get them in 2013, like Django Unchained was a 2013 one for us.
Yeah.
It came out on Christmas Day in America, and I think that's a weird film to see on Christmas Day.
Very bizarre. 2012,
obviously we had Skyfall came out, arguably the best Bond film of all time. The first Avengers film came out, which obviously revolutionised cinema. We had Prometheus, which signalled the return of the Alien franchise. The Dark Knight Rises, ending Christopher Nolan's trilogy. We had, obviously, The Hobbit, Unexpected Journey came out, which turned into Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
We had The Hunger Games start off as well. We had Lincoln. We had Dread as well, which should have been big when it was.
Dread, yeah.
That should have been bigger.
That was a brilliant.
We had Wreck-It Ralph, Sinister, John Carter, which flopped.
But was glorious.
I haven't seen John Carter
yet. It's a guilty pleasure.
We had Argo as well.
Failed gloriously.
But the film I'm going for in 2012 was Rian Johnson's Looper.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I did consider that, but a fantastic film.
The last film,
and
I saw at the cinema before I went to university.
The Director of Brick.
Yeah. Which I studied at A-level film.
Yeah.
But yeah, Rian Johnson, who's gone to do Last Jedi and Knives Out since, and direct some amazing episodes of Breaking Bad as well.
Mm.
Just a fantastic, very original sci-fi thriller, which is one of the most horrific scenes in cinema. It still haunts me 7 years later. We have the one where the guy's been killed in the past, but so his future self, his body's phone disappearing. It's like,
beautifully done.
That was horrible. It's like, my fingers disappeared.
Yeah, it's... very well executed, like plot-wise. Because it tied up a lot, like all its ends really well, so it felt very complete. Kat?
For me, it was Hunger Games and Hobbit that I wrote down, because, firstly, starting off major franchises.
Mm.
But also, I was at the age where they were the big thing to me. I was all into young adult literature. So the moment you see, something I really love and they're doing an adaptation. Oh, wait, they actually did a good adaptation of a young adult novel. What is this?
This works.
And then Hobbit, although they changed a lot, I still adored it so much. And I do love the whole trilogy.
Mm. Yeah, I guess The Hobbit was an interesting one because they didn't use the same Weta Workshops prosthetics. I think it was one of the main reasons why everyone fell in love with the Lord of the Rings, other than the fact they're just great films in general. I thought Jackson's choice of framing during the filming was a little questionable at first, but in terms of the story itself, I have generally a lot of respect for the way it was done, and I think he did do a really good job of it. I think now you mentioned Dread, I'd be tempted to actually put that on top of my list, because the two that really stood out to me from memory are Django Unchained and The Dark Knight Rises.
Oh, okay.
Tarantino is always does a great job with the soundtracks. Stylistically, he has such a resounding voice. Brilliant performance, terrifying performance from Leo DiCaprio.
Oh, yeah.
Mm, absolutely, and Christoph Waltz, and everyone, but I guess those cast members in particular. And just The Dark Knight Rises, because it was you know, a great finale to a great trilogy. You know, it felt like, you know, I guess this could be, you know, I guess sort of said as Christopher Nolan's style, but it was like watching a Michael Mann crime thriller in the form of a superhero film, which made it so stylistically brilliant and so unpredictable at parts.
2012, also, we had The Woman in Black film. 2011 was the end of the main Harry Potter franchise with The Deathly Hallows, which signified a big end of an era for many of us. But obviously, people were like, what's Daniel Radcliffe going to do next? And obviously, Woman in Black was a huge event film. It drew a lot of controversy in the UK because it got given a 12A rating, which caused like walkouts and like parents taking away their running out with their children who were too terrified. That was a big thing for us when in this country.
Huge, yes. Huge. 2013. What are we looking at here?
It's the second Tom Hanks film. I'm going for Captain Phillips. I just thought fantastic.
I'm a captain now.
Yeah,
it's a brilliant film.
Now, we had great films. We had, obviously, Gravity, Prisoners, World War Z, 12 Years a Slave, Monsters University, World's End, Pacific Rim. But I just thought the film that stood out for me above all was Captain Phillips. I just love that film so much. It's so tense and brutally made, and very fantastic performances from Hanks, of course, and the rest of the supporting cast.
Yeah. Kat?
Not on quality of film or effect on country as a whole or anything like that, simply because it's one of my most watched films and I still watch it every few months. Olympus Has Fallen. I love that film and I can just keep watching it. Plot holes you can drive a bus through, but it's beautiful. It's just good old fun, overly American action.
Brilliant, yeah.
Yep.
There's nothing wrong with that. Can't complain with that at all. I'd say the two that really stood out for me are, 12 Years a Slave, just poetically done, really well, really well made, a really beautiful, haunting film, and Martin Scorsese's The Wolf of Wall Street.
I thought you were going to say Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah. I mean, to make like a 3-hour epic about this ridiculous crime drama and make it so ceaselessly... It's just exhilarating. Like, it's such an exciting, punchy film that just, you know, it never takes itself too seriously, but also it is so aware of itself as this, like, this epic of a story about this man's rise and fall from grace. And to have a story that, you know, I guess with the actions of it hurt so many people, but you're telling it from the perspective of, you know, this man's greed and, you know, how he's driven by this this sort of this lust and his insecurities, isn't it? But it's also like it's funny and it's
energy,
it's daring,
it, you know?
And yeah, exactly. And it's so and New York.
It's kind of like troubling that, like, Jordan Belfort is like, for this day, he's still idolized by many people. And his, like, inspirational quotes have been shared on Facebook. I'm like, he's a con man, for God's sake.
Yeah,
and he sells out places. Like, he filled up the 5,000 capacity Hammersmith Apollo in London like a few years ago.
Yeah.
He left because somebody asked him the question, when are you going to give all the money back to the people you frauded? And he walked off.
So, really? Oh, wow.
He got a big argument broke out. He's like, ladies and gentlemen, have a wonderful night, thank you. And just left. I was like, oh.
Oh, wow. That's...
And people were like, you finished early. And, like, he's a con man. What do you expect?
Okay.
So if you're stupid enough to pay £35 a ticket to see Jordan Belfort, come on.
Okay, 2014.
2014, like, there's obviously some great films there. There was Godzilla, Winter Soldier, X-Men Days of Future Past in terms of the big blockbusters. You also had Grand Budapest Hotel, Gone Girl, Guardians of the Galaxy, the first Lego film, Fury, Hobbit, Battle of the Five Armies, Selma, I think Foxcatcher. I don't know if that's 2015 for us, or because it was 2014 in America. The Guest as well, of course. But the 2014 film I've gone for is Jake Gyllenhaal's Nightcrawler.
Nice, excellent. Also,
that is a brilliant film.
Yeah, one of my choices as well.
Hey, great minds think alike.
Yeah.
It's a difficult film because a lot of people, big spoilers for Nightcrawler here, but a lot of people found it problematic that he didn't get his comeuppance. But that's just the nature of our world, unfortunately, that a lot of people do get away with it, and that lot of people are slime balls, and they do raise the top, they rise through the ranks just by being slime balls.
Yeah, and I guess it's a great commentary on the state of guerrilla media.
Exactly. Like, Jake Gyllenhaal in an interview described him as a modern day superhero, which is obviously very can be seen as very problematic, but he does, in a way, he has all these powers and does get what he wants because of it. So,
well, yeah, and it's ahead of its time because it's a film about creating the news,
yeah,
you know, which is almost like a prelude to fake news,
yeah,
which is something that has definitely become the heart of the media conversation towards the end of the decade.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So it's almost like, in a poetic way, this foreshadows it. Yeah, but Kat?
I also want an honourable mention to Edge of Tomorrow.
Oh,
because
yes.
They showed so much about partly the power of advertising, but also how easy it is to make a major error in advertising. That they did so much of the live, die, repeat advertising, no one put that with Edge of Tomorrow, the film, so they had to call it on all the DVDs and in the cinema release, Edge of Tomorrow, live, die, repeat, because people weren't putting it to all the trailers.
But two and two together.
Yeah.
Wow, that's... Make sure you're consistent with your marketing.
Yeah.
That's
it might be this film. I think it was last decade, but it was a small film with Ben Kingsley, who was credited as Sir Ben Kingsley in the posters. For the last minute, he did say, I don't want to be credited as Sir Ben Kingsley. So some guy had to run, literally had to duct tape his name over the word Sir in can. So yeah, it was like,
Wow, that's...
Yeah. Sir Ben, but yeah.
That run is exciting, though. Nice.
I'm surprised no one went for Frozen for 2013 as well, I just realised.
Oh, yeah, that's
that was definitely a big film of the decade, not just because of its culture impact, but for, like, marketing, because obviously, famously, Tangled merchandise didn't sell well, and so Disney thought Frozen probably go the same way. Obviously, Frozen, I suppose, did hit, and there were, like, fights for Olaf, there was Frozen toys were going
it was a surprisingly sleeper hit.
I know, and there was... Obviously made a billion. There were Olaf toys going for £400 on eBay. It was like the Toy Story. It was like the Toy Story when one came out. You know, people were actually like fighting over Woodies and stuff.
It was a riot. There was chaos. Like there was there was bloodshed on the street in the streets of Medway.
somebody got a shopping trolley for the eye over an Elsa doll.
I mean, I would I would also say like big shout outs to Damien Chazelle's Whiplash. Brilliant performances, great execution of a really tense drama within such a simple concept. David Fincher's Gone Girl, great book, which I actually read after the film. Just really a really good suspense drama that draws a lot out from just the two central characters. And the idea of like a diary format, which was surprisingly well pulled off, in my opinion at least. And also, Waititi and Clemens will be doing The Shadows.
Oh my god, I forgot
yes.
That's a masterpiece, yeah.
Oh, I forgot
it's so
that
funny. It's such a good film. It's timeless as well, that's the thing, it's timeless humour.
It's fantastic. I've seen it so many times, each time I've laughed as much, and I love showing it to people.
And we look at where Taika Waititi has gone to,
you know,
Thor, Dark World.
Well, no, you mean Ragnarok.
Ragnarok, yeah. That's it, wow.
Yeah, but no, he's coming back for a fourth one. And they're still allowing him to do little things in between, like Jojo Rabbit, which I did see. And despite his issues, I think it's a very well-made film. And he's doing another film about the American, the soccer team of Samoa, which is with Michael Fassbender. And he's going to do the Akira one after that as well. So his career's gone up, you know.
Yeah, big year 2014.
He's going to be a big man 2020. He's directed an episode of Mandalorian and he's IG-11. So yeah, he's had a good decade.
Big year for him.
So yeah.
2015.
Well, I've got two, because one is Whiplash, which is my film of decade, because... It got a UK mainstream release in 2015, so that's kind of when even got its premiere at a festival 2014. I'm putting it 2015, but because that's my film of the decade, Whiplash as well. It's basically it's a mixture between Rocky and a bomb disposal film with a drum kit. That's the best way of putting it.
That's
why I described it. Yeah,
That's fantastic.
It's so tense. I never thought hitting a cymbal and a drum skin would be tense.
Yeah,
but
it's so emotional.
It's one of the
exhausting.
Best performances of the decade as well from J.K. Simmons, just as a really complex character.
Yeah, he's one of the best villains of the decade.
Yeah,
at least.
He's an
orchestral leader.
I know, and it's like
this
whole weird relationship where they kind of need each other. But the other choice I went for, which definitely got a 2015 release, was Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah. Which is, yeah, definitely. Which I've seen a number of critic sites state that has the film of the decade. Yeah, it's been very well received and very well remembered.
Exactly.
Yeah, mad. Absolutely mad.
That was an insane film. I knew somebody who watched it during the final year of uni three times. I was like they went to the cinema three times in between revising their final exams to go see this film.
Did they go into their exams and like spray metallic spray paint with them?
They opened with, oh, what a beautiful day. Was it lovely day? Oh, what a lovely day.
What a lovely day, yeah.
Lovely day.
Kat?
Well, Force Awakens.
Yeah, sure.
The fact that Star Wars bringing it to the newest generation, because we grew up with prequels.
Yeah.
So as bad as a lot of it is, there will always be a soft spot for them. But Force Awakens, I felt, was actually a film of brilliant quality. It was a love letter to the originals, and I saw that quite a lot of times. Also,
all the time.
Also want to mention Inside Out, just for the amount of really difficult themes that Pixar managed to cover in a child-friendly way. Just, I've shown that to so many people, and did, like, throughout uni.
Nice. I'd also say, number one for me, without question, Mad Max Fury Road.
Fantastic.
Like we were just saying. Just insanely reckless, stunning, like visually stunning. And just, like the idea of, obviously it's, like the fourth in, out of all the Mad Max films, but it's the idea of a post-apocalyptic car chase film, and that's the bulk of the film.
Is
brilliant. Like, it's so, there are so many creative opportunities
and just
there.
Immortan Joe has become just one of the most iconic images of his villainy of the decades. One of the villains of the decade, I'd say, just because of how iconic he looks as
By
well.
Furiosa.
Yeah.
Got his voice, yeah. That's ASMR for days.
I also want to give a shout out to The Night Before for Michael Shannon turning into an angel and flying up into the sky.
That should have been a super hit. Yes. Opportunities lost with that film. 2016, second half of the decade. What's made us tick?
For me, it's the one. I was having a look through it, and of all the films that came out, it was the one that I think struck me the most. Because I was thinking, do I go for Arrival, La La Land? I think La La Land might be 2017 for us, but Rogue One, Civil War, Deadpool, 10 Cloverfield Lane. Nice Guys, but I was thinking Sausage Party even, Nocturnal Animals, Hell or High Water. But the film that struck me the most was I, Daniel Blake by Ken Loach. So yeah, the man who famously hates the government.
And in this film, he continues to hate the government.
I just thought I, Daniel Blake was the most powerful moving films I've probably ever seen. The fact it leaves you upset and angry at the same time, it just shows you how powerful it is. I just thought it was just absolutely phenomenal, really. Just, I thought it was just so well made, it was so emotional. I just thought it was fantastic, really. Just such a powerful sleeper hit, really. And the fact that, it's been discussed in Parliament by Jeremy Corbyn kind of shows its impact.
Yeah, definitely.
The fact that he told Theresa May during Parliament's questions, just go to the cinema and watch it, just shows you how powerful that message is, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess, it knows what this audience is, it knows what it stands for, which I guess is why so many of Ken Loach's films are celebrated in the way that they are, because they're very clear on their position, they know exactly what they represent, and it's that gritty kitchen sink realism that is, such an inescapable reality of British life.
I know.
For so many communities. Cap?
For me, Hacksaw Ridge, because that is actually my film of the decade.
Ooh. Oh, interesting.
I just think it is beautifully well made. Cinematography is absolutely on point. And just the overall, just the love that went into that, completely based on a true story. And if anything, they had to tone his story down to get it to play on film without people thinking it was too over the top. I think just an actual hero. I do have a massive soft spot for war films anyway. And yeah, I think that it was passed over with no good reason. Because there was a lot of awards he was nominated for, but missed out on them, mostly to La La Land.
La La Land, probably, yeah. And Moonlight.
And Moonlight, which, admittedly, Moonlight, I've heard is great, but I haven't seen it myself.
Oh, it's brilliant.
But Hacksaw Ridge, I'll always just be like, you should have won more. You should have. Yeah. It's beautiful. It's amazing. Well made. And yeah, although I also want to just do an honourable mention to Rogue One, which in my opinion, best Star Wars.
Yeah.
So even though you have a lot of range, lots of powerful things, but showing in a mainstream one actually that all of the good guys have to have the darker side for it to work, and so they've just done the powerful topics they cover in it, wonderful. Also on powerful topics in a simplistic form, Zootropolis. Disney, part of it is self-aware humour, wonderful, but Disney just saying, showing themes of, drugs and racism and all sorts in a way that kids can watch without being negatively affected. Just I think, is very powerful.
Yeah. And Idris Elba gives his best performance in that film, I think, as the police chief.
While making fun of Frozen, yes.
Yes, yes.
That's a really good way of putting it. And I guess on that topic of conveying racism in a way that doesn't, you know, impacts them, you know, impact sort of change the tone of the film, but also presents it in a way that, you know, kids can understand, you know, what it is and the fact that it exists even when you know you might not initially see it is actually really well done. I'd say, you know, I think the key standout film for me that year was Denis Villeneuve, because we butchered his name when we said it last.
I said Denis Villeneuve.
But Denis Villeneuve, which maybe I'm still getting parts of that name wrong, but yeah. His
better than on my attempt, definitely.
His sci-fi drama Arrival.
Yes.
Which was
Amy Adams.
Yeah, based on a short story, what's it called? Like, The Story of Your Life or something like that. It's, yeah, not Arrival, but a really great philosophical sci-fi tale. I think it's something that really does experiment with the concept of time without going into this convoluted, like, non-linear narrative. Really interesting portrayal of the aliens as messengers as opposed to invaders. And just a great story about how we try to understand those who are different from us. You know, not just with the aliens, but it's, you know, like, you know, Amy Adams is trying to stop this war breaking out by trying to stop the Chinese from firing at the spaceships. And, you know, this sort of, this whole drama spirals out from there. But it touches on each of these tones in a really sort of, you know, mature, like, gentle way. And
the way how sort of language can bridge a gap. As they start to understand the language and translate, then it's of less of a chance of war, and they're sort of starting to be able to communicate in a way.
So I love how
it does show the importance of communication, but even between people who have no way to have met it before and still no way to communicate, but they need to find some sort of bridge, because otherwise humans fight.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. All right, on to the next year, which is 2017. Okay. What are we thinking for the big
2017, obviously we had like The Last Jedi, Logan. My second one, obviously a lot of other films, Dunkirk, Wonder Woman, Get Out, Blade Runner, Baby Driver, Logan Lucky, Shape of Water, obviously Three Billboards, just so many. War of the Planet of the Apes, of course, Big Sick, The Post, I think that was 2017. Atomic Blonde, God's Own Country, Trainspotting 2, I think, Ghost in the Shell, which I thought was decent, and the first It, Kong Skull Island as well, my ultimate guilty pleasure, John Wick 2.
But your go-to?
Number two was a Disaster Artist, but number one is Brigsby Bear.
Nice.
One of the greatest underrated films of all time.
Produced by The Lonely Island.
Produced by The Lonely Island.
Wow.
It's got starring Mark Hamill, Claire Danes, Matt Walsh, and Greg Kinnear, and a lot of other actors. Carl Mooney is the lead, fantastic.
Yeah, great spin, great twist, surely into the film.
Yeah, it's a really, really little gem of a film, which completely...
Really heartwarming.
Made me cry.
Yeah, a great tale of friendship.
And the power of filmmaking as a group of friends as well.
Exactly, yeah, which I think we can relate
to. Yeah, no, how filmmaking I think what I like about the film is also it shows you that, like, filmmaking is actually, like, therapy for a lot of people, which
it stresses
its importance, which I think is a really important message.
I think as you hear so many horror stories about young, sort of less experienced filmmakers who lose friends in the process, you know, if it comes to a situation where, you know, egos can take over and arguments get heated and, you know, projects can turn into horror stories, but then that's a very much a film that reminds us that it is also a, you know, therapy and a communal experience. You know, the friendships can be made, the bonds can be strengthened, that it's, you know, it's really an art that brings people together as well as, you know, the outcome of the project. Kat?
Dunkirk, I love just the way that sort of, you know, it did get a lot of people who weren't necessarily into war films sort of back into sort of experience a different thing. It was sort of, it wasn't straight action, it wasn't straight history, it wasn't quite anything. And going back to what you said previously on Arrival with sort of the idea of time not being linear, I liked how they did it in a very different way. The first time I watched it, I found it quite jarring, but the more I watch it, the more I enjoy the all sort of timelines and difference of spaces of time.
Yeah.
So just the way you sort of every time you're like, wait, so this is actually happening when this bit is. And I always found it was a great thing to watch with someone who hadn't watched it and then have a massive chat for about an hour afterwards.
Mm.
And my other thing, Greatest Showman. Sorry, me and my mum went to the cinema to watch that quite a few times.
Both my parents actually played that the soundtrack all the time.
I did that too.
Like the amount of times I'll sort of just, you know, be kind of in the opposite end of the house and I hear this. It's like, oh, right, this the CD is on.
Yep.
Here we go.
And what about you?
I'd say, yeah, definitely standout film was Get Out. Jordan Peele's big entrance into the horror genre. Really, you know, I guess it was sort of on that borderline of whether it was a horror or a thriller or like just a general political commentary. But it was, you know, not only well executed as a film, but the discussion that it was trying to evoke was really fresh, really original. And there are so many takes that people have taken from it. You know, I was talking to my brother about what he saw, you know, what he thought the film represented that was, you know, I guess sort of similar to mine, but, you know, sort of a little more developed in its own way, and mine was sort of developed in another way. And it's, you know, it makes you think about very new things, which I won't give away unless anyone hasn't seen it, but I'd highly recommend it. But it's a film that just makes you talk about this new sort of original topic that definitely exists in, you know, not just American society, but also in British and general, like, you know, general societies that, you know, that hasn't really been discussed in that way before. And I thought it was really
well thought of. Yeah, I think that's fantastic.
All right, on to the next year, 2018.
2018, our second to last year. I'm going to go for... There's a lot of good films. Obviously, you had Infinity War, Black Panther, Quiet Place, Black Klansman, Spider-Verse, Widows, Mission Impossible, Fallout. We had Leave No Trace, Sorry to Bother You. In America, Eighth Grade came out. Didn't come out to 2019 here, but that's a really good film from Bo Burnham. We had Jonah Hill's directorial debut, Mid-90s, came out in America that year, which was a very interesting film. Also, we had Overlord as well, don't forget, that came out. And of course, who can forget the multiple Oscar winner Fantastic Beasts for Crimes of Grindelwald. But no, my 2018 film is Beautiful Boy, starring Steve Carell and Timothée Chalamet.
Aww.
A very powerful, extremely powerful and hard watch of a film, but it's one that needs to be seen to be believed. It's a very powerful tale about crystal meth addiction and recovery. And the thing the film isn't afraid to tackle is that there are, when you go through addiction, there are multiple relapses. It will happen, and it's expected, but the film doesn't go full into a classic trope of, he's better, relapse. It treats it in a way that's very emotional, and it's great soundtrack as well, including Mogwai and Nirvana, and it's just really just beautiful, made me cry as well, so.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
Kathleen?
I've got to actually agree with that. I had written down Deadpool 2 just because I love it.
Because it's hilarious, but, yeah. It's a fantastic film.
But I'd forgotten that was when Beautiful Boy came out, and so I remember when you showed me that one, I was just there, just like, there can't be any other noise, do not distract me from this film.
Yeah.
Oh, it was hard-hitting, but definitely worth watching.
I haven't seen it, but, you know, from what Jack was saying before this, and, you know, after you first watched it,
yeah.
It seems so emotionally compelling, and obviously it's a true story, so there's so much, yeah, so much behind it. So I definitely will watch it. I'll definitely make time to get around to it when I can. I'd say, yeah, big mentions, Ramsey, Perichetti and Rothman's Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Of course.
Yes.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, I was late to that crowd. We have an episode coming up on that film specifically, with another special guest.
Yep.
But when I did see it, when Jack eventually
forced
it onto me, yeah, I was very impressed. Brilliant comedy, amazing animation, really excellently well wrapped up with so many different plot lines, and it was definitely a surprisingly great one for me. Actually, I have a few here because I think 2018 was a particularly great film for me in my eyes. Ari Aster's Hereditary,
of course,
the explosion of the Aster Man onto the into the horror verse. Really interesting indie horror, Which definitely, you know, as we'll discuss in our 20th episode, has maybe changed the way we think about horror and the way the horror genre has changed for the new decade. Alex Garland's Annihilation.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, one of the first big films to discuss the impact of Netflix on cinema-released films. Also really interesting, really good themes, amazing performance from Portman, and again, visually stunning. And Spike Lee's Black Klansman,
of course,
which I watched on Christmas last year, of all films. Really funny, but also a very important story, also based on a true story. Great direction from Spike Lee, great script, great performances, and just a really punchy, well-told, memorable film. I'd say Black Klansman was probably actually one of the better films of 2018, even out of the list I've just described. So I guess we have already released an episode on our thoughts on 2019.
Well, I was a joker, you were Midsummer, but Kathleen,
Captain Marvel.
Okay, that was quick.
There's one fight scene, just the way they had just the music, the whole, it was a beautiful balance of humour with the action. Nice bit of girl power, I've got to admit, I do like that in the film.
Mm.
And if you haven't seen it, you need to know what a flirting is.
This will change everything.
And it was one of the first big films to use de-aging technology, because that was one of the big trends of this decade. We've seen the emergence of de-aging technology. We saw it briefly in the Terminator films. We've seen it in obviously Marvel films such as Ant-Man. Captain Marvel was one of the bigger ones because it's throughout the whole film Samuel Jackson's de-aged.
It's Chapter 2,
The Irishman, of course.
Yeah, The Rise of Skywalker.
Yep. I think the Hobbit films, they de-aged Orlando Bloom slightly because obviously elves never age, so.
Yeah, he's still a gorgeous Orlando Bloom.
Yeah.
A lot. I guess that's. You know, again, a question of whether we're going to see more of that in the 20s. Is that going to slow down? Are we going to
start technology get better?
Younger actors? Will producers use more alternative routes? That's going to be really fascinating to see. Question for you in particular. Are there any other big moments, not necessarily for specific films, but just big moments that you thought defined the 2010s in film and TV that stood out for you? Things that changed, or just, you know, changed the way we watch films or the way they're produced.
I did feel definitely rise in streaming and things, because, like, I can't remember exact date, so I might be wrong on this, but I think sort of 2010 it was more, you know, some families, like, you had Sky and everyone else we were just on normal stuff, and then sort of by the end it's sort of like, well, sort of by the middle you had sort of Netflix and things, a couple of people, but I wasn't one of those that sort of like had to have everything. Now it's like, it's rare to know someone our age who doesn't have Netflix and at least one
like
of the others.
We've got Apple TV, Prime, obviously Prime Now TV, Shutter, Shudder.
This huge surge at the end of the 10s.
BritBox, which is now out.
Because we now have all of those, as well as still going to the cinema most weeks, and you should see the stacks of DVDs.
Yeah. Because that's what we've seen big in this decade, is like the slow first death of physical media.
Because
we've had HMV go into administration twice.
Yeah.
We've seen, obviously, like, a lot of some films aren't even coming out on DVD. It's just Blu-ray.
Mm.
So we've seen
I guess it's been an era, it's been a decade of choice. Like, the rise in choice. And that's across social media, that's across, you know, there's an app for literally everything.
Yeah.
Which is designed to make your shopping easier. And it's been the exact same with entertainment, with, like you were just saying, this, you know, end of the decade boom in services.
Yeah, I mean, now I can watch most things that I would watch on my phone on my commute. That's something I'd never have imagined at the start of the decade.
Exactly,
I mean, phones couldn't do that, let alone any of the rest of it. But
huge changes.
There's plenty of people, on their lunch break, they will literally, depending on how long it is, they can literally watch an episode of something.
Mm. And the transportability of that technology and of those services. I mean, I knew a guy at the company I used to work for who'd watch Game of Thrones on his lunch break. Because he could. You know, he had that time. It was easy for him to get it up on his laptop. There was, you know, literally nothing stopping him. And
yeah, when I used to do long commutes, there's quite a lot of the time that there'd be people there sort of watching an entire episode of something. You know, you're sort of like, I kind of want to watch. No spoilers. And then just out of the corner of your eye, you're just like, wait a minute, they're dead?
I'm going to watch The Irishman on the tube, like little 20-minute doses.
Just as Martin would want it.
It takes like 5 weeks.
I'm going to watch on a Tamagotchi just to annoy Martin Scorsese.
Amazing. I mean, Jack, any other key points that you've noticed or, you know, key revelations in the last decade?
I think we've had obviously the big superhero booms happen this decade specifically as well. Obviously we've gone from one Marvel film a year to now three. Obviously we've seen more like crossovers, seen a lot of more mergers this year. Obviously we've had AT&T, their merger, we've had Disney Fox, of course. Obviously we've seen Disney this decade, they've bought Lucasfilm, Marvel. I think that was this decade. But yeah, Disney have definitely swallowed up a lot more of the industry now.
Yeah.
And they're now like the big dog. Obviously.
Disney own all of us now.
Which I guess goes back into another point I had about studios doubling down on their branding. So with the acquisitions of Pixar and Marvel and... sorry, not Pixar, that wasn't this decade. When was the Pixar acquisition again?
2006 or 9, I think.
That was it, you're right. Yeah, but with Marvel, Lucasfilm, it's, you know, Disney is... sort of, yeah, doubling down on this idea that it represents just family-friendly entertainment.
Yeah.
And that's why those acquisitions have done so well for it financially. And I guess that was something that Universal maybe tried to do more of at the start of the decade, with 2010's The Wolfman. With
kind of that Dark Universe experiment kind of failed, didn't it?
Exactly, yeah. And the same thing with, which you just said with Tom Cruise's The Mummy. And that's, but again, they also have this first looking deal with Blumhouse.
Yeah.
So Disney releases all, Universal releases all these, these cheap, generally quite gimmick driven Blumhouse horrors. And which also ties back into Universal's brand as being the studio that originally pioneered the horror genre.
Yes.
With the original Vampires and Bela Lugosi.
In Frankenstein, the Mummies and Creatures from the Black Lagoon.
Exactly, yeah. Universal was the horror studio. So they doubled down on their brand in that sense. Not necessarily as what the studio is producing themselves, but what the production companies they're partnering with. So again, that's something that we could see much more of in the upcoming 20s.
And I do think we need that, but you do need to sort of associate things with certain bits, although a certain amount of variety is great for everyone. When they all try and cover the same niche spots, then you don't go to any of them.
Yeah.
Well, when you have, having certain bits, this horror's from this company, that's definitely worth seeing. It's like when you see a certain director's done something, if you saw, Tarantino did a romance, you might not want to go as quick.
Yeah, exactly. There's that feeling that comes with the name. When you hear it, when you read it, there's that sort of that sensation that just, just reminds you of all of their themes and focus and everything you were just saying. I think we'll see a lot more of in the 20s.
Yeah.
Really interesting. Just a little conscious of time. Are there any further points that you guys
can
say about the 2010s?
No, that's it for now.
No, I think we're all good.
We've done it, yeah.
Terrific decades. A great decade of learning, particularly in the entertainment world.
An ever-changing decade. Every decade been different for cinema, but that was a very good decade, I feel.
Yeah, and we're going into a new decade where we're going to watch everything through very different eyes as older people.
Yeah.
All right, so thank you, 2010s. You've been great for the most part. And bring on to the 2020s.
The roaring 20s. Thank you for listening.
Roaring 20s. Thank you. Thank you very much, Kathleen, for joining us as well. Yeah.
Thank you for letting me come back on.
Absolutely. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Tom Hanks Defence Force. Find us and join the conversation on Twitter and Facebook.